Deborah Tantliff is the founding principal of Tantum Real Estate. She's concerned about the economic forces that are combining to raise development costs across New Jersey in both urban infill and suburban redevelopment locations. She's trying to help local governments cope with that reality in her own development practice. In recognition of her commitment to elevating the discourse among policy officials about the importance of public-private partnerships in spurring positive growth, Tantliff recently received the New Jersey Builders Association Distinguished Service for Outstanding Political Action Award. She spent more than a dozen years with Roseland Development, mainly in construction, and later moved to the development side of the company. She joined us by telephone to talk about her commitment to conversations about public-private partnerships in the development space.
I launched Tantum a couple years ago. The company is a certified women's business enterprise, and the organization really focuses on downtown redevelopment as well as transit-oriented developments. And in context of that, we do a variety of services, both in terms of advisory work for other owners and municipalities, as well as for investors. We operate as partners with landowners and other developers, and also really focus on development. I used to work for Roseland Property Company. I was at Roseland for north of 12 years, and my career at Roseland spanned from starting as a construction admin out on site in Roseland's construction company and ground up on one of their projects. And it's been a couple of years both in the field in construction and then another couple of years in the corporate construction doing estimating and purchasing and subcontractor procurement. So having had a fairly extensive construction background, then eventually navigated and migrated over to the development side of the company, where I worked under an operating partner and interfaced between construction and development. And then eventually migrated fully onto the development side of the company, was educated at NYU's real estate program. I received a master's in real estate finance. And over the course of my tenure on the development team, rose to become a vice president overseeing development and construction. And my portfolio at Roseland spanned a few thousand units, including most of, I think we're most recognized is for the work that I've done in Morristown and the, suburban Morris County portfolio, as well as a couple thousand units on the Hudson River waterfront and a variety of projects in between in some of the more suburban and urban light markets. So have both the suburban revitalization and downtown redevelopment focus, as well as the, Hudson River, Gold Coast waterfront urban markets. When I launched Tantum a couple of years ago, my focus was and continues to remain really on kind of the dynamics of downtown redevelopment and what that means to a primarily suburban state and how we can urbanize ourselves in context of where the social and demographic trends have gone, and how we can utilize transportation and transit-oriented projects to serve as conduits for larger economic development. That was really kind of the premise of approach. And I have focused more on, creating more of a boutique characteristic to developments and kind of how that translates to some of the social trends that we can talk about.
Sure. Well, I think the first thing I'm really interested in is how you work in public-private partnership advocacy. One of the big problems, as you are well aware, that places like the Gold Coast, the Hobokens, the Jersey cities, and all of those places face, mm-hmm. is the extraordinarily high price of living there. It's getting more and more expensive. And so providing solutions for mixed income, supportive and workforce housing that was described to me is something that's kind of important. And how do you approach it differently as a female real estate development leader than the people who are traditional leaders in the male-dominated industry that we're talking about?
So I think to answer that question, you kind of have to take a step back and look at what's happening in the larger dynamics of the marketplace. Today we have a market where we have more consumers. And by consumers, I mean a few different definitions. First and foremost, the end user. We have a growing population of people who are looking to live in these residential products, and be that a downtown urban multifamily rental or a suburban rental, but you have a greater demographic, both of younger professionals and empty nesters, and a higher quantity of end user. You have a higher number of investors and developers into this market than you've historically seen. And by this market, I mean all of North Jersey, not just the Hudson River Gold Coast waterfront, which we hear about regularly. But there's a much greater number of potential equity investors and capital players in the market, as well as developers that are playing around in the space today. And what that's translating into is a higher cost of development. You've got more people. You've got a greater demand, and fundamental economics tells you that that leads to greater pricing. So the cost of acquisition and the cost of development has become much greater. And with the higher demand for end users, the cost of living continues to rise, both of which are recipes for dynamics that are not necessarily sustainable as we continue to redevelop our suburban towns. Now, what's coupled with that increased user dynamic is you have a growing number of municipalities who are looking at is what happened in Jersey City, the whole Hudson River waterfront, suburban markets like Morristown that have successfully urbanized themselves and created these urban light environments. And you have a growing number of municipalities saying, we don't want to miss the boat. How does this work? How come we haven't been able to make our projects move forward? Why haven't we been able to see the growth that some of these other markets are seeing? So the role of a developer is to really come in as an educational partner into that municipality and help forge the vision of feasible redevelopment for that community. So communities as a whole have a very specific vision or image of what their town is or should be. And a successful and smart developer recognizes that this is our area of expertise, where we have an opportunity to work hand in hand with a governing body on a local level to explain to them some of the overlying dynamics and factors that make for smart and successful redevelopment. So explaining to governing bodies what are some of the real obstacles in the market that can make or break a project, and why certain product designs or structures are more feasible than others. And you have to work with both the local governing bodies and administrations to help educate and explain and implement that process. And you have to take that to a higher level and work with the state agencies and the state legislators and the policymakers so that the pathway for implementing the smart economic development is there. And that is really the fundamental role of a developer. You must be a partner in a community to have successful, smart, long-term redevelopment and positive effect on a community.
How has been the relationship between the developers, the developer community, and the public officials in places like Hoboken, Jersey City? Are they receptive to these ideas? Are they receptive to planning the development in a way that doesn't disadvantage one sector of the community over another?
I think, you know, my comments are a general comment, and not, you know, I don't necessarily want to focus on a Hoboken or Jersey City. I think that the distinction is communities that are more urban in nature versus those that are more suburban, and what that translates into in terms of an existing demographic and residential base and a business base in the community. And from a professional base, the distinction between municipalities that have full-time planning agencies and planning staff versus communities that have historically seen much less economic reinvestment in terms of development. So you have more part-time agency, you know, part-time liaisons and part-time governing body members who this is not their core focus on a day-to-day basis. And that's a fundamental distinction between different communities. And the opportunity for communities who have full-time institutionalized staff, and I don't mean institutional in the big, you know, big machine way. I mean, there's a structure and system that is a transparent recognized, proven system in place that the community and the business community and the development community understands, versus the historic, you know, more suburban markets where there has not been the flurry of activity. And it is frequently a hand-in-hand process where the development community and the municipal community and the governing bodies really must work together to create the redevelopment path moving forward. And that's a fundamental distinction in how the communities operate and how the process moves forward with the developer to really implement that smart project.
And what are some of the challenges that you face doing this kind of development in New Jersey?
You know, I think that as a whole, you know, New Jersey is a very hyper-local market, right? We've got our hundreds of municipalities. Each one has their own local form of government. And the cycle of positions and roles changes on an ongoing basis. So you're frequently working on projects for countless years, and you're dealing with a rollover of representatives from the administration. And there is a distinction between the land use process that municipalities like to take. So depending upon the staffing of the municipality and the master plan review process and the community engagement process, some towns are much more prone and capable and willing to engage in the redevelopment plan process, as opposed to those who are hesitant because they look at it as more spot zoning and preferential treatment. And those are fundamental distinctions in the land use process and how the development community can efficiently move development forward. We as a development community are very close-knit. Our success is based on our colleagues being successful and all tides rising. And we as developers are very aware of the open door dynamics to development from community to community, and those towns that are more willing to be creative and work with developers to utilize the land use tools that are available to them to craft smart redevelopment policy are much more exciting and feasible for developers to move forward with, because the risk tolerance and the process for entitlements can take so long and is so risk-based. So being able to get a handle on any underlying uncertainties in moving the land use process forward is a key component of how developers choose to pursue projects, not, you know, beyond just based on the market economics, the household income demographics, the location, is there waterfront, are there parks, you know, beyond all those qualitative factors. The one of the single largest factors in being able to implement redevelopment is the local political process in being able to efficiently get it done. You know, we speak about the high cost of development and the high cost of acquisition and the increasing cost of construction that are translating into the increased rents. The cost of land use entitlement is a significant factor in the redevelopment process, that if we can work in partnership with municipalities and governing bodies to streamline things and move the vision forward, that saves time and money that helps the developer get a lot more comfortable in investing in this risky process.
Now, a little while ago, you received the Distinguished Service for Outstanding Political Action Award from the New Jersey Builders Association, and they said in the announcement of the award that it was a testament to your efforts to educate government officials about the scale of the state's housing shortage, the importance of eliminating obstacles to housing production, and the need for smart policies that support new housing opportunities. How successful do you think you've been in educating those government officials? What's left to be done in that area? What's the key thing that you want state officials to know about housing?
Well, I think, you know, the first and foremost underlying issue that faces our industry today is the cost of living and the need for more means of affordable housing. And affordable housing can meet a wide range of things to a wide range of constituents and communities. You know, what you can afford to live in is not necessarily what another person can afford to live in. But the bottom line is that we as a society and as a state must come to terms with the fact that the cost of living must be feasible for the general working population and for New Jersey as a whole to remain competitive in the larger arena. We must be able to ensure that our businesses can operate, and our businesses look to operate in locations where their employees can afford to live. That's just a very simple formula. And when we are faced with an increase in development that is consistently pricing out the workforce constituent base, that's a problem. So for New Jersey to remain a competitive state in our arena and in our region, we must be leveraging all of the benefits that we have by being close to New York City, and for South Jersey being close to Philadelphia. And we have to work together with our policymakers to help create dynamics and policies in the housing market where the cost of development and the implementation of residential product is one where we can allow for mixed income, supportive housing, and more means of affordable housing. And there's been a growing discussion in the legislative arena about this in context of the debacle that is COA. And there are some municipalities that are very proactively trying to get their hands around what should be done. And there are others that are, waiting for the other town to figure it out first, and everybody's going to kind of fall in step and follow toe. And in the meantime, the development community is, in a state of confusion as to, what is my real obligation? How do I really move a project forward? Because nobody really knows what the affordable housing numbers are going to be. And from my perspective as a developer, those are tremendously critical issues that we as an industry must figure out. But in the meantime, we cannot allow economic development and housing redevelopment to come to a halt while we figure it out. So we need to be making strides and moving best efforts forward to implement smart projects that include supportive housing components and allow for mixed income pricing strategies so that we can continue to deliver product and keep businesses here and keep residents in our population. So I think that there's a tremendous growing dialogue that's happening. And, my comment has always been, I don't know what the affordable housing obligations are. Town A, Town B doesn't know what their obligations are, right? The courts are eventually going to figure that out, so we hope. But in the meantime, we as a state recognize that we have certain pathways in terms of tax credits and grants where we can allow for the financing capital stack structures for these mixed income projects. And unfortunately, we don't have enough money out there for years and years to provide for the housing needs that we need to have today. So I'm of the approach that I don't know what the affordable housing obligations are. My concern is, how are we going to create efficient, streamlined systems where we can deploy the dollars that are available to actually implement these projects, right? The system is complicated, it's intense, and it's for a reason, and rightfully so. But in the meantime, there are countless developers out there who are trying to implement projects that can include a workforce or mixed income or affordable housing component, and the barriers to implementing and releasing those dollars to allow for that, there has to be a more streamlined way. Because otherwise we will continue to be at a disadvantage and we will continue to see out-migration out of the state.
Just one last question before I let you go, Deborah. How do you see the outlook for the multifamily market? It's been pretty much on fire for the last year or so in New Jersey. What do you see on the horizon? Do you see any dark clouds, anything that people need to be concerned about?
I think that, as we talked in the beginning, there's a general increase demand for multifamily rental products. That is just a social demographic shift that we today as a society are much more comfortable living in rental communities. Rentals are no longer a dirty word when you go into a municipality. We've become a much more fluid society, and renting does not necessarily translate to transient. It is an efficient way of living, right? That is what the multifamily rental space comes down to: efficiencies and the lack of maintenance and the ease of living. So I think that the general demand will continue to be there. I think that as in any market, there will be pockets where there will be a certain slowdown in growth as in rent growth as a significant amount of inventory comes online. That's just a balance of economics. Having said that, there's a tremendous pent-up demand for the product. So I think that the demand for the product will continue to stay. I think and I hope that the thrust of continuing rental rates will slow down, and I believe that that will be a general effect across the board, that the rental growth will stabilize. I think vacancy rates will continue to drop as the demand continues to flood the market. And I think that the communities who look to utilizing their inherent advantages, like transportation, like their downtowns, are going to be the ones to remain competitive and be effective in the next phase of the market, because the flight today is to have that more urbanized experience and to have that downtown dynamic. And the communities that work to effectively utilize their positive ingredients in their own community are going to be the ones to remain competitive.
Deborah Tantliff is the founding principal of Tantum Real Estate. Deb, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
It's been a pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
For GlobeStreet.com, this is Steve Lubetkin, State Broadcast News.